Garden State Debate, where the talk is real. Garden State Debate, no joke, no frills. Garden State Debate, it's the talk of the town. Garden State Debate, for people all around, yeah. Garden State Debate, Garden State Debate, Garden State Debate.
Hello, everyone. My name's Ryan, and welcome to episode 5 of Garden State Debate. We're very excited to have on the show today special guest Charlie Cradiville, who's a co-founder of the widely distributed media outlet New Brunswick Today, which can be found on at newbrunswicktoday.com, as well as on social media, including a very widespread following on Facebook. Charlie himself is a political activist. He's been a political candidate. And he is an expert on the use of two very important New Jersey laws, including the Open Public Records Act, also known as OPRA, as well as the Open Public Meetings Act, OPMA. So on the show today, we're going to discuss a couple of things, including Charlie's views on protecting democracy and the associated headwinds of doing so here in New Jersey. We're going to definitely review those two New Jersey laws, OPRA and OPMA, how Charlie uses them to inform his work product, and he's got advice on how you can too, and how we can do that as residents here in New Jersey. We're also going to touch on critical stories that Charlie's been working on for some time now, including the latest updates on the very unique, interesting story of the Lincoln Annex School. And Charlie's going to give us the latest updates on what's going on with the Lincoln Annex School, which I think you will not want to miss. We're also going to touch on just Charlie's attendance and how he goes about being at the governor's coronavirus press briefings, which he's been a regular attendee at since the beginning of now more than 100 plus meetings. And you can get an inside scoop, kind of from a reporter's perspective, on what it's like being in the room during those meetings. You can find us always at our website at gardenstatedebate.com. On Twitter, please follow us at GS Debate Podcast, or my hosting Twitter account, which is Ryhost, R-Y-Host. And please subscribe to our YouTube page if you did not already, just by searching Garden State Debate. Again, the music, instrumentals, and lyrics are always provided by the very talented Jairus Cook. So we appreciate you tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show. Thank you.
With that, I'd like to welcome Charlie to the show. Charlie, it's great to have you. Welcome, and just want to see how you're doing. How's everything going?
I'm great, Ryan. Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction, and the honor is all mine. Congratulations on the new program.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. But we're here definitely to talk about you. Hopefully you'll be able to educate us on a lot of things, and we'll be able to pick your brain on a lot of things that I think you can really help New Jersey in terms of education and what's going on, and in terms of some of the stories that you're covering. And I'm excited to get into it. I'm hoping we can dive into some stuff, on OPRA, the Open Public Records Act, as well as OPMA, which is the Meetings Act version. I know that you have a lot of expertise on both of those, as well as how to use them, how others, viewers and listeners might be able to use them, and how they supplement your work in terms of and media and other things. And I'm also hoping to get your opinion in terms of where we're at here in New Jersey, obviously with through media and through being at the briefings and just a resident in New Jersey, getting your opinion on where we're at in terms of the pandemic, health economy wise, and maybe what you think we've done well or haven't, and kind of looking forward, looking ahead to the future. And what your views are. And then maybe if we have time, hopefully we can get your quick take. I know Governor Murphy just recently filed some things to basically for re-election for the 2021 gubernatorial election here in New Jersey. So hoping to get your take on that. And then there's been some recent developments as well in the 2020, obviously it's being just 30 or less days away here. 1 month exactly of the 2020 presidential election. Your take on the first debate, as well as some other things such as recent outbreaks that we've seen in the White House and among that territory and those individuals, including the president, as well as separately some outbreaks in sports in the NFL. It seems, you know, we're going to week 4 of NFL, so I'm barely into the season, and we're seeing some uptick in cases there. So I'll be interested to get your opinion on that. Does that sound like a good agenda? Is there anything you want to add? I think that's pretty full.
No, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
All right, great. So just to start things off, maybe you can kind of supplement what I said about New Brunswick today and give us a sense, the viewers, listeners, a sense of your career, how you got it started, and kind of walk us through it. The story of Charlie and how you got into the things that you're involved with today.
Sure. And thanks again for having me. I basically, came here to New Brunswick to go to Rutgers, a long time ago, and ended up getting a degree in journalism and media studies. Was able to put that degree to work at a nonprofit that hired me in part to start an online news outlet in Paterson, New Jersey. And so had the amazing experience of working with one of the best journalists in the state, Joe Malinconico, to get that project started and sort of, learned from him how to be a hard news journalist covering a beat like that. And, worked with him on the technology and using the web part of it. And, together we figured out how to do online hyper-local news in a meaningful way in New Jersey. And so when I, moved on from that opportunity, it only made sense. I wanted to start the same kind of project here in my home city. And so New Brunswick Today started as a very modest, passion project. And lo and behold, a lot of people saw value in what we were doing, and many of them actually wanted to contribute to it.
What year was that, Charlie, if you don't mind me asking, approximately New Brunswick Today?
Yeah, we started it in 2011, towards the end of 2011. And so, we every year have had a number of folks come through and write their own articles and contribute in their own ways. And that's, for me, been the most rewarding part, is getting to train and work with young journalists and give them, help them build their skills and watch them, move on to bigger and better things sometimes. So we do that. And ultimately, I also, can't help but, advocate and fight for some of the causes that are, at the top of my mind and the community here in New Brunswick care about. So I've even gone so far as to run for mayor of the city in 2018 as an independent, and was very happy to do that, and it was a great experience. And I'm of course always looking to educate and enlighten people and get folks to good folks to run and get involved in the government to help turn things around.
Thank you for that. I find that secondary part very interesting as well. I think your journalist exposure is well known, but your passion as an activist and also a candidate is very intriguing for the total package of your career. And I think you kind of alluded to it, but running for office, obviously, as you said, is good experience. I know you ran for, I think, the Democratic chair in Middlesex County. You're running to win an election, but is there also a sense of like democracy that you're trying to protect when you think about these types of things?
Yeah, in the races I've run, they've been races where if I didn't run, no one else would be contesting the position, and the incumbent would be reelected, without the democratic process. I do very much value democracy, and I do, think that it's important to have, engaging competitive elections in any, jurisdiction, and certainly New Brunswick deserves that. So, I've done that. And I've also, as you mentioned, challenged the chairman and the vice chairwoman of the Middlesex County Democratic Party organization as well.
That's very interesting. And it brings up another actual question, which is running uncontested elections. I think that's something that happens at the local level quite frequently, right? So would you say that that's not the best thing for democracy in general? Obviously, there's great candidates out there that win elections, and there's probably great candidates out there that are uncontested and get appointed into certain seats. But the uncontested nature of local elections, do you believe that's an issue and locally across New Jersey?
Oh, yeah.
Or a concern, or however you want to put it.
Very serious concern. I mean, even at the state legislature level, you see, folks have no primary opponent and sometimes even no general election opponent. But in the towns and cities of New Jersey, mayor and council races, and of course, many times Board of Education, you've got essentially no choice for the voters. So it then, raises the question of, well, why should we be, supporting these candidates if there's only one choice? And it really is a problem for, obvious reasons. But I do think that, the root of the problem is sometimes the system itself and the form of government of the towns, right? If you have a form of government that, is a partisan form of government, for instance, in a town where the partisan balance is very strongly one side, then, the general election is not going to be taken as seriously, and the primary election is going to be more important. And, that's a system that maybe works out well in some towns, but in many towns, it creates a sort of, dominance of the machine in a way that, doesn't have to be that way. You can have nonpartisan elections. You can have them in November. You can have them in May. So that's one, thought, but there's also other key factors about, how are the council being elected? Is it by wards or is it at large? And also, just the timing of the elections and what time of year they're held and what group, how long the terms are and how they're grouped with other, higher up offices and how that all shakes out. A lot of it is really, not serving the general public, but serving to keep the people in power in power.
Right. No, that's a great point. And I think it'd be a very interesting educational for listeners and viewers. But on top of that, then through the uncontested nature of, one last question on the subject of politics, have you ever seen it lead to, you kind of just said it, but to, what the public or constituents would view as, not the right candidate? And if you have, have you seen any actionable things taken on that type of hypothetical situation?
Yeah, I mean, I would say right here in New Brunswick, we've had the same mayor since I was in kindergarten, 1991. And, in the beginning days, he would have to fight a challenger off in the primary and the general. And then sometimes it became, only one of those, he would face one opponent. And then by, the time we started the newspaper and 2014 came around, no one even ran against him. And I don't think it was because, he had developed so much support and been so popular. I think it was that, folks were not there was no real incentive to challenge, especially after, you know, the FBI was investigating his 2010 campaign and no one ended up getting charged with crimes. In fact, they got absolved. And, basically, you know, it looked like the guy was invincible, and that's why people weren't stepping up. And also, it's a tough thing to do. But, after I saw that happen in 2014, no challenger in the primary, no challenger in the general, no need to you know, have a policy platform, no need to get out and debate or do any, community outreach. I wouldn't want to let that happen again to my city. So in 2018, I put myself forward as a candidate to force those things to happen.
Very interesting. A very interesting kind of side of the activist part of yourself, especially New Brunswick being, population is not small, right? You might not have it off the top of your head, but
almost 60,000 people here. And you would have liked the campaign. It was very, very transit oriented, a lot of transportation stuff I was running on.
Good. I obviously am a big transportation advocate, and in terms of safety and also efficiency and things like that, as a societal kind of right. So I appreciate that. Thank you, Charlie. So moving on in subjects then to some of your other expertise, the Oprah. What is Oprah and OPMA and the Sunshine Law? And are there differences between the Sunshine Law and OPMA? And can you kind of just start from like square one for the listeners and viewers? What are they? And then after that, we'd like to talk about how you use them. I believe you've in past discussions, you've told me about how often you use those and how helpful they are to supplement your work.
Yeah, great questions. The Open Public Records Act, not to be confused with Oprah Winfrey, known as Oprah, is the fundamental law that citizens of New Jersey depend on to get access to public records, government records. Some people may be familiar with the Freedom of Information Act, which is analogous. It's at the federal level for the federal government. This is New Jersey's version of that, OPRA for short. And then the OPMA, the Open Public Meetings Act, is also known as the Sunshine Law. They are synonymous terms. And it's sort of the other fundamental law when it comes to advertising and execution of public government meetings in the state of New Jersey. Now, should be noted that, we're speaking remotely today in this pandemic, and both of these laws were changed significantly in the first week or two of the pandemic, significantly so. So we can get into that, but before we get there, the reason that you should care about these laws is they're how journalists or any person in New Jersey can obtain critical information, including things like how much government officials are paid, who is getting contracts from the government, and whether they're honoring them. Police records. If you see a police video in a news article, it was probably obtained through the Open Public Records Act if it was from New Jersey. So these are, legal mechanisms that the public, that anyone can enforce their rights to see the same records that the government has. And of course, it's a complicated thing where there's, hard and fast rules, and everything kind of is in flux, but you've got to ask to know if you can get it. So any person, I would encourage you, if you're curious about something that your government is doing, you could do it really easily from this website, opramachine.com, opramachine.com. And you can look through all the different government entities. It applies to towns and counties, as well as all these independent authorities and state agencies, things like Rutgers, NJ Transit, you know, all the various, like the people who run the Meadowlands and the people who, you know, run utilities and other authorities around the state, housing authorities, parking authorities, they all have to comply with both OPRA and the OPMA. And what that used to mean was that you would guarantee, you'd be guaranteed to get some type of response to your request within 7 business days under the law. That's the part that changed with COVID. Now, that part of the law is watered down, gutted, and the timeline is more like they have to try to do it in 7 days, but they just really have to make a reasonable effort.
So based on that, how long do you see them getting extended? I mean, I know you're an avid user of the machine, so to speak.
Yeah, but. Yeah. So, unfortunately, some folks
don't even use this.
Right? And I have a case against the New Brunswick Board of Education seeking emails. This is a request I made back in February, and it should be noted that prior to the pandemic, the governments would routinely request extensions and say, I can't do this within 7 days, but give me another week, give me another month, and sometimes never give you the records even, under the old system, it wasn't perfect, but now they have a legal mechanism to actually excuse them from the legal obligation. So it becomes much tougher to challenge in court, which is ultimately the final way to enforce the law. And so, I'm making progress in my case against the Board of Education, but the reality is I just asked for, emails from, board employees to a couple of different companies. Their, backstory here, the backstory, but, your audience might not be familiar with the fact that New Brunswick is trying to give away one of its public schools to a private corporation so that it will be demolished and replaced with an expansion of the Robert Wood Johnson Hospital here.
Yeah, this is the Lincoln Annex School situation that you've brought up plenty of times directly at the briefings with the governor.
Yes.
And like you said, you've mentioned to me as well. So I'd like to walk through that. One thing before that, since you're giving a lot of great information on what people can do and how they can file these types of requests. For someone that's doing it for the first time, they can go to OPRA Machine, as you said, and we can put the website up later. I can send it out with the release of this. But the question is, I guess, if someone's putting it up for the first time, can they do it anonymously or not? And if you do it anonymously, how would you get a response if you're anonymous?
Great question. A lot of people don't want to necessarily have their name associated with asking for certain sensitive information. And it's one of the advantages of OPRA Machine. Under the law, you are allowed to file a request anonymously. It used to be kind of tricky to do that. You'd have to kind of maybe make an email address just for that purpose or something like that. But OPRA Machine makes it easy. You can just, you don't have to use your name. You can put anything in there and the response is routed through OPRA Machine to
got it.
The general public, it's posted for the general public to see automatically.
So as a portal, it aggregates the information. It doesn't need to be sent directly to the person as well as I got it. So that makes
sense.
Thank you for that.
If you go there, you'll see 12,000 requests already filed, and you can see the responses in real time as they come in and view the documents yourself. So it's a powerful law. Made even more powerful by this great free tool, OPRAMachine.com.
So you can go, just to add on, you can obviously go and search your town, search something you're interested in, use keywords like that, search even Charlie Cradiville to see what he's working on or that has asked for and received, kind of get a status of anything you may be interested, which is also helpful if you're not applying for one yourself. So that's I think, is a very valuable tool. So thanks for that. So sorry to take it away, but back to the Lincoln Annex School, can you walk us through again here? I know you've repeated it plenty of times, but what happened with the Lincoln Annex School and what was your involvement and where's it at now? Actually, I don't have the latest update, so I don't know the whole story.
Well, it's a crazy story, I must say. And I've been doing this a while. I've never seen anything like this. And it is, sad that it's, happening in the middle of the pandemic. But old timers will remember it as the St. Peter's Catholic School. It was, a high school and an elementary school next to each other, right across from Robert Wood Johnson Hospital in New Brunswick. And so the, hospital had always wanted to purchase the school and expand to that real estate. But what happened was the Catholic Church did not want to sell it to them because they do abortions. And so they, closed the school about 10 years ago, but they held out and didn't sell to the hospital. Instead, the Board of Education purchased it, did a great thing, purchased it, renovated it as was necessary, modernized it. They actually connected the two buildings, the elementary and the high school, and turned it into one big, I guess you could call it an elementary / middle school, a 4th through 8th grade, 750 kids.
And when you say Board of Education purchased it, you're talking at the county level, at the city level, at the state level?
New Brunswick Board of Ed.
Got it.
And in 2016, reopened it as a public school. So, a huge win for the community. We needed a school. It's a pain in the butt to get these schools from the SDA, and that's a whole other conversation maybe. But we were able to do it because we took a private school that had closed, renovated it, upgraded it, reopened it. 2016, just 4 years ago, literally 4 years ago. They just put solar panels on it last summer.
Wow.
Now, in late last year, Robert Wood Johnson Hospital, rumors starting to swirl that they are going to buy the school and close it, demolish it, expand to the site as they've wanted to do forever. I start asking Board of Ed members right away, and they give me strange answers. Things like, that's above our pay grade, or, we're hearing the same things you're hearing, but, it's like, well, you guys own the school. You just put $22 million of our money to do this, and now you're going to give it up? Who is doing this dealing behind the scenes, and why aren't you keeping the public informed? And obviously the issue was one that got some traction. Parents, when they learned that this, when the answers were not there, when they couldn't answer things like, who's having these discussions? We can't say. Well, obviously not the community. The community was left out. And so people were riled up, and we really, it was a situation where I approached it more as an organizing situation and educated people and got people, active. Other outlets covered it quite a bit, and we had huge marches leading into the pandemic. And then of course things, took a turn for the worse in terms of the power dynamic between the government and the people here, who are, in many cases are families of undocumented immigrants. This is a school that's overwhelmingly, low income kids from New Brunswick. And so it's really, tragic that the hospital would even try to, make this move. Because they have their line, their side of the story. They say, we're going to build them a replacement school. But the answer is when? And the Board of Ed, I just asked them at the last meeting, they could not answer it. They refused to answer when this new school will open. And so to the answer your question, the current status, the school is virtual. So it's in no physical location at this time. But as far as the Department of Education is concerned, the school is closed. And it is, going to be relocated to a warehouse, a converted warehouse owned by a private, real estate mogul who is close friends with the mayor and enriched the mayor by buying the mayor's building, which is another part that we're now starting to see in the public sphere here.
Wow, that is that story definitely has a lot to it. So.
Yes.
I can ask 100 different questions that come to mind, but so it's open in 2016, it's now closed, but it's online stream, like the students are connected to the warehouse school, but streaming online. Is that
Exactly.
The status of
the teachers at a warehouse school, the district is all virtual though.
And how many students approximately did you say?
About 750 students.
Wow, that's a good amount of students. And obviously I'm guessing you might have spoken to some parents or heard from parents and are they making their cases to the Board of Education as well?
I mean, well, you know, that ship has kind of sailed. The Board of Ed sold them out from the beginning.
So it's kind of,
you know, like they said it's above our pay grade. They're obviously right. Not for the people. And, you know, the powers that be, like Robert Wood Johnson Hospital and Mayor Cahill are the ones calling the shots as far as they're concerned. They immediately voted in an illegal vote that's still being contested in court to, you know, do this the night they heard the presentation from the developer. They had zero questions, heard from tons of public members who said, don't do this, is a bad idea. And then they added it to the agenda and voted after everybody had left to you know, begin the process of closing the school. And you know, without so much as a timeline on when the new school will open or, you know, any sort of like clarity on the site or whether it's, you know, contaminated or not. So real serious concerns on the part of the community. And so one way we're addressing those concerns is by filing OPRA requests and also challenging decisions under the law for OPRA and the OPMA. And so that's another really, you know, fraught topic right now, because government meetings used to be a thing that, you know, I would see you in person at town hall and we would all be in the same room and we all had the right to videotape it. And, you know, decorum would be enforced by the chair, but, you know, generally people would take turns speaking and, you know, would have, that is all kind of out the window now because these things are being conducted online and the state unfortunately has put together some really flimsy rules for, you know, the requirement to have public comment. And, you know, that's still a thing, but it's not what it used to be. So the right to be able to go to a meeting and question your officials and get answers in real time is not always the case these days. And unfortunately it's continuing a really dangerous trend of the people in power being unaccountable or less accountable than they were just a few months ago.
Right, understood. Thank you for that. But just kind of how you see it now, I mean, you kind of made it sound like it's a done deal in a lot of ways, but you're still looking at it. So do you have some sort of hope that through these different, and you mentioned something about, I think, being contested in court and still kind of filing, you know, OPRA requests and things like that. So do you consider it still an open thing that hopefully can be turned around, or is it kind of a done deal?
Yeah, I mean, it ain't over till it's over. To my knowledge, the property has not been transferred and it certainly has not been, you know, demolished. So okay. The community is not ready to give up. And, you know, I don't think it would be smart for them to do that either, because, you know, at the end of the day, no schools are open and we need, you know, the classroom space. We need, you know, the city is still growing and, you know, it's crazy to give up this school in exchange for like a vague empty promise that's not really enforceable. So I think that, you know, ultimately the courts will decide the matter, but we're continuing to fight this in the streets too. And we had a protest last weekend with a large, couple hundred people coming out to oppose this. There's a lot of players involved, so we're not just pressuring New Brunswick Board of Education. Like I said, we've given up on them. They've sold out long ago. We're pressuring Rutgers that's involved. We're pressuring the hospital. We're pressuring people like Governor Murphy and his interim education commissioner, and you know, continuing to question him because he really doesn't seem to know very much about this, what the implications of this are.
Yeah, and I think, and it might just be a fun fact or whatever you want to call it, but I recall you asking this question several times, and the governor referring to Judy Persichelli, the Department of Health commissioner. She actually went to the former version of the school, is that right?
Yeah, she's a St. Peter's alum, and hoping to have her world. Support, but I don't think so. I think she's pretty tight with the Robert Wood folks.
Interesting. That's obviously kind of a really sad story. But like you said, not over till it's over. And in my perspective, they're lucky to have you, the activist and journalist part of you, as part of it. So please keep us posted, and definitely wishing you guys and the families and everyone the best with that, for sure. That's just insane, to be quite honest to hear. So tough to move on from that one, but is there anything else in terms of what you're working on that's related to in the media, or you I mean that was related to a loss, it sounds like, lawsuits and things like that. Is there anything else going on?
Yeah,
probably there is.
There's a number of lawsuits that I'm actually engaged in right now, basically all surrounding the Lincoln Annex situation. In some cases trying to get records released, things like emails that would show us how far back the Board of Education was scheming to sell the school, whether their statements were comported with what they told us at the time. And also I'm suing to basically overturn the Middlesex County Improvement Authority's approval of redevelopment agreements for these projects. So this would be to build the thing that's in place of the school, but also to build a new school and also to build a parking deck. And all those redevelopment agreements were approved in a Zoom meeting where the public was not allowed to be in the Zoom. They had to call in. They disabled the ability to visually participate in the meeting or to use the app. And they had a presentation, a PowerPoint, a visual presentation from the developer that the public could not see. So, I think that under the Open Public Meetings Act, it's very clear that the public has a right to witness the meeting. And if the meeting consists of a PowerPoint that you can't see, the entire public was deprived of their right to witness the meeting, and therefore the vote should be overturned, et cetera, et cetera. And so that is a case that I've brought, and you'll be interested to know I'm up against a pretty powerful, prominent law firm, the renowned Coughlin Mincello, the Assembly Speakers law firm.
Oh, wow.
Law firm is representing the Improvement Authority, and I'm representing little old me.
So he's representing the Improvement Authority in terms of backing the nature of the Lincoln Annex School, and being
defending their votes that they took and way they conducted their meeting.
Wow, that is very interesting. And so is the SDA involved in that?
We've been trying to get them involved, but they have resisted.
I know they're involved in some other things in the news recently as well. I'm not sure if you're.
They have a lot, and it involves New Brunswick too. But they've had a lot of scandals, a lot of upheaval, and they're broke, and they're not going to be able to do their job, which is to build these schools for poor districts like New Brunswick. And so that's always been a sticking point here in New Brunswick, is the community's demanding more facilities or fixing up the facilities, getting things like air conditioning in these 100-year-old buildings. And the city is telling us, the Board of Ed is telling us, oh, well, we're an SDA district. We can't, we need the SDA to do it. They were being dishonest when they were saying that. But nevertheless, the SDA has built a couple of schools here. And, here on this issue, because the district went around them and did it all without them, the SDA is saying, we're not involved. It's not our problem. Even though we are an SDA district, they're kind of looking the other way and letting it happen. And can't say I'm surprised based on the people they have on that board or the scandals that we all read about.
Right. Are you following the other scandals closely, or?
I have the report, great reading right here from the.
Oh, wow, there it is.
Really, really.
So which report is that? I mean, I saw the name of it. But.
It's released by the State Commission on Investigation. It's into the SDA, their sort of mismanagement and poor hiring practices under the person that Governor Murphy installed to run the thing.
Okay. Interesting. So that's the full kind of case briefing on it, or the recap of it?
It's got some new information. This story, of course, played out over a year ago. And really, it all started with Katie Brennan's allegations that she had been raped by Al Alvarez, who was a New Brunswick resident and a lawyer at the firm that the city has hired to fight me in these Oprah cases. So it's all one situation there. And anyway, Al was hired to be the chief of staff to the SDA. So he was sort of the number two guy there. He was very close with Murphy. You know, he had helped get Murphy elected. And so that was, what kind of attracted the attention to the SDA. But once people started looking into the SDA, they saw that it had really deviated from its mission and that, Murphy's people had really, been using it more as a hiring, opportunity for their allies than anything else.
Very interesting. I know that's like fresh. Well, like you said, it sounds like connected to old news, but a new, fresh kind of set of stories related to what's going on currently with it. So,
yeah, and the new information that Murphy knew, or that the administration was kept abreast of all the moves.
So it's a story for New Jerseyans to definitely to watch and see how it plays out. Anything else on that subject, Charlie, or if not, any other stories that you're working on that you'd like to discuss? I do have other things that I'd like to talk about that I mentioned kind of in the beginning, but I just want to give you that opportunity.
Yeah, no, just, happy to talk about the governor's briefings. And
yeah. One question I think that you mentioned earlier, shootings in general. Across New Jersey, I think they're up a certain amount. And I think you mentioned in New Brunswick, there was a recent one. Is that, can you give us a little context on that? Not to bring up bad news, but it's noteworthy, obviously, every time something like this happens. You brought it up when we spoke, and it probably deserves some attention.
Yeah, and thank you for asking about it. It's not pleasant to cover. I don't enjoy or look forward to these kinds of stories. It's always a disappointment to see them happen. But they are important to cover. And so we have a big problem with, gun crimes in New Brunswick. In September, we had at least three shootings, and we truly have no idea if there were more because the police have not been helpful or informative. The ones that we know about, we only know about because we were there. And we, that's one of the advantages of New Brunswick today is we have reporters who live in town like me, and we go to the scenes of these things in real time and broadcast live from them. So we had, another unfortunate shooting just a couple days ago. So we're talking about, basically four in a 1 month period. And one of them may have been the worst mass shooting in the history of Middlesex County.
Wow. We had
9 victims total. 2 young men lost their life. This was just a really vicious, crime in, the streets of New Brunswick not far from the Rutgers campus. There was a party there, and folks just, four people hopped out of the car with weapons and shot up the whole street. So, with that kind of thing going on, one would think that the city's leaders would have, heartfelt, cogent remarks to share with the community and, to reassure them or ask for them to cooperate or whatever. But our mayor has been completely silent on this. And it's to the point where I had to do an article on it. It was 2 weeks, and it's now 3 weeks, and he hasn't addressed this.
No statement on it at all.
No statement, no nothing. He hasn't used his Twitter since May,
publicly news, whatever. Yeah.
He's the mayor of a city of almost 60,000 people, and he hasn't done
I'm guessing you've reached out to him for a statement and things like that.
Of course, gave them the opportunity and encouraged them to make a statement, and you can read the article it's on our top of our website right now, newbrunswicktoday.com, and see the videos for yourself of what the council is saying and what the mayor's spokesman is saying, and just really, not, and Governor Murphy too. Honestly, his answer was poor as well. He did not.
What was his answer?
His answer was, I heard there weren't any Rutgers students involved. That was his response. Was
what was the question? Do you remember?
The question was, you know, can you comment on the mass shooting?
And that was the answer.
But, you know, Colonel, to be fair, Colonel Callahan did address it in a more meaningful way, but I would have thought the government at least expressed condolences for the loss or whatever. It was very, strange and out of step for that to be his first and only, take on it.
That's unfortunate. Couple unfortunate things, sad stories that you seem to be covering, but like you said, that require attention and accountability, and that's what you're after. Just to switch gears on which is tough to do, but we did mention about, we're talking about the governor briefings in general. I know you've attended them. You've kind of talked a little bit about some of the things that you might have asked, but just we're many months in now. I think New Jersey residents are very familiar with the briefings in terms of watching them or watching the governor speak and the Department of Health, Judy as well, and like you said, Colonel Pat Callahan, and some special guests here and there, but just want to get your take on, I know you're a regular, usually like once a week at least, at the meetings since pretty much the beginning. So do you view how has it been? Maybe you can kind of walk us through what it's like being in the room. Have things changed in terms of from a reporting angle? About people, how people are feeling since the beginning, and then me as well, kind of walk us through like what you're typically asking about. I know, like we said, you've asked about the Lincoln Annex School, but other things, or if there's kind of a perspective you try to take when you're in the room.
Sure, great questions. Yeah, I it really is a privilege to be able to attend the briefings and to ask questions there. A lot of times I'm speaking to somebody for the first time about, Lincoln Annex or whatever other issue. And they're like, oh yeah, I know about that. I see your questions you ask, or I hear you ask the questions. So they are definitely widely watched. I think the big change is that they're less frequent. In the beginning, they were almost every single day. And I did attend more often, but I still try to make it at least every couple of weeks. And it's been, The most frustrating part is the governor and his answers, or the responses that don't answer the question. So a lot of hot topics like the SDA, he's just punting on all that. And even that report that I just showed, he says, I didn't even read it. He didn't read it yet. So, it's hard to really get a good answer on those types of things. I've been watching my colleagues do that the past few days. But, I try to, pin him down about the issues I think matter most to New Brunswick residents. With our audience here in New Brunswick, we get a lot of questions about a lot of different things, everything from, public health, questions to issues with the unemployment system, motor vehicles, all those things. So, when appropriate, I try to ask those kinds of questions of the governor, but also things about stuff that has a big impact here. So like Rutgers, things like, the fact that our football coach at Rutgers is the highest paid state employee, even though they haven't played a game yet. He's been getting paid at almost the 100% of what his contract says. And, try to get answers on those types of issues that I think are, meaningful to the Rutgers and New Brunswick audience. I did, of course, ask about the shootings and got that, insufficient answer. I ask about Lincoln Annex a lot because it's an issue that a lot of people here care about. But, I also just try to ask things that I think will spark, good discussion. And I'm pretty sure some of my questions have led to executive orders being signed and other things. So I'm glad that, by persistently asking the same question, things do actually change sometimes.
That's great to hear. And, to your point about kind of the answer, the way that the answers are received or not, I know there's a lot of things that, to his credit, you may not be knowledgeable on everything that's going on. Not one person can in a whole state of New Jersey, but also sometimes it's, you know, I'll get back to you or things like that. So, and I think you get a lot of, I'll get back to you types of comments. So when that happens in those circumstances, it's like, do they get back to you like right after the briefing, or is it like an email type of follow-up, or is that like a variety?
Yeah, I'm still waiting for a lot of the follow-ups, to be honest. And it's unfortunate, because when you're watching as an audience member, it sounds like, oh yeah, somebody's going to get back to this question right away. I'll bet they're going to hop right on it. And, you know, they'll be scurrying to get the reporter an answer as quickly as possible. But the reality on my end, at least with my questions, is that they almost always are not answered unless I'm the one to initiate a follow-up. And even then, don't always get the promised answer. So a great example was a week ago, the 25th of September, I asked, it wasn't a gotcha question. I was just asking how many of the 21 counties in New Jersey actually achieved the 50% or more polling places for the November election, right? They've had to decide how many polling places they have. Murphy told us it was going to be at least 50% of what the normal is. My county, we have less than 50%. We did not achieve 50% because there was an exception, a loophole that was worked into the executive order. And so our county is an example of one where we didn't get 50%. I just want to know how many of the 21 counties didn't make the 50%. Governor Murphy's response, quote, "I don't have a specific number for you, but we can come back and get that for you." And then he says some other things. He says, "Dan Bryan will come back to you as he always does," which I think he's referencing before I've busted their chops over Dan specifically not responding to things that the governor promised. That I've, you know, sometimes I've gone back to the governor a second time and said, you know, "You promised this, I didn't get it." And he says, "Well, we'll definitely get it." And they still didn't get it. And I came back a third time. And then, you know, so he's referencing that Dan Bryan always responds, but unfortunately in this case, no response for a week. And I had to initiate yesterday and still haven't gotten any actual answer to the question as promised.
Interesting. So like you said, to the viewers, what they're saying may not actually be in reality what's happening in terms of those types of responses. But hopefully they get back to you eventually at some point in time. Right. You got to keep asking. Yeah. You don't strike me as someone that's going to just go away if you have a question. And then just the vibes of being at the press conference with other reporters, is it like a little bit of a social atmosphere? I mean, like, obviously it's very serious stuff, but do you guys get together and discuss things before or after with reporters or with the panel themselves, or is there anything on that?
You know, it is a little tough with the distancing and the masks.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
We do occasionally, you know, commiserate with one another. I know I'm always happy when I see my colleague, Dan Munoz, who used to work for us at New Brunswick Today's with NJ Biz now. And so, for instance, on Friday, I did see him there and he said, you know, we ended up grabbing a bite to eat. And,
oh, great.
And, you know, also another fellow, Bob Shapiro, who I know from the Society of Professional Journalists, was there. And so we also got to catch up afterwards. And so, you know, we do sometimes get to see one another, but it is a awkward space for doing it. You're right there with, you know, all the governor's people and cameras, and the chairs are all real far apart. It's a big old room. But once you get outside, if it's a nice day, usually, you know, people will be chatting out front sometimes.
Right. Very interesting. Thank you for sharing kind of the inside, kind of from an insider's view of what it's like to be at a briefing and kind of your thought process and how you go about asking questions and things like that. I think that's really helpful, since there's a lot been 100+ meetings. So that's a lot of hours of the public viewing. So it's really interesting to get that. So thank you. I really appreciate it. And just, I know, kind of going to wrap up here and hopefully in the next like 5-ish minutes, but a couple quick, hopefully they're quick ones. or at least you can give us a quick take, even though they're probably longer subjects, just in terms of the pandemic, where we're at in New Jersey, from everything from, you know, from you, from, you know, journalism, your activism, and as a resident, how do you feel where we're at, and where we're headed, from any perspective, just any take on that?
Yeah, it's a crazy time we're living in. And so I'm not really sure how to gauge where we're at, because it's hard to say what the future holds. But I do know that we've seen some increases generally in New Jersey, and specifically in New Brunswick, actually. Yeah, there was one day we had 25 cases here. So definitely not out of the woods, definitely, you know, concerned about, you know, implications of, you know, what the change in seasons is going to mean, and, you know, the flu and other stuff. So, you know, I'm always optimistic, but I'm definitely very cautious, especially with the election going on and so much uncertainty of, you know, our place in the world. It's really a crazy time.
Do you have any, no, thank you for that. And you kind of brought it up when you were talking about the election and the 50% thing, but kind of made me think, do you have any, obviously it's a political topic, do you have any take on the way that New Jersey is I don't want to missay it, but I think it's a vote by mail situation, or you can take your, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, you can take your ballot, you get it in the mail, you can hand it off to somebody, you can put it in a drop box, you can mail it back, you can do a provisional ballot. There's probably a couple other ones if you're handicapped, you can actually cast one, I believe, and I may have missed some, but correct me if I'm wrong on any of those, and also, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a, you know, unfortunate that it, the rules were not developed sooner, and that, you know, there was maybe not the best process used to arrive at them, but the rules are the rules, they've decided on the rules. Mm-hmm. I do you know, think that, for instance, since the governor said we were going to get at least 50% or more polling locations, they should have them. It's, if you're truly concerned about the spread of the virus, having more locations is better, because that means they're less crowded. You know, they were not able to achieve that here. Still trying to find out how many other counties are in the same boat, but that's a real shortfall in my opinion. It's, you know, I'm not so concerned about people not being able to use the electronic voting machines, because the experts believe that hand marked paper ballots are actually the most secure, best way to be voting. So, you know, that's somewhat of a thing that I know so bothers a lot of people, but it doesn't bother.
Got it. So you're more into the process, and the lead time and kind of the organization part of it could have been maybe done a little bit better, and less worried about the validation of doing it by this mechanism versus casting, like you said.
And I am a little concerned about the counting of the ballots early, starting that 10 days early for the first time. That was something that was kind of like snuck in there at the last minute. And I don't think that was fully thought through. I know from experience from the May 12th election, there were a lot of things that weren't thought through and a lot of stuff that had to be kind of done ad hoc. And, you know, I think that, you know, with so many ballots this time, so many people voting, it was incumbent for them to get the rules ready earlier and figure this stuff out. But, you know, right. It's New Jersey. It is what it is. We're here.
We're dealing with it. It seems like it could be a whole show, actually, on that process, since we're going through it for the first time, like you said, with some unknowns in a lot of ways. A couple other things. Murphy, I think, started the process to file
to run campaign for
to campaign for re-election in 2021. Thank you for that. So what's your take on that? What, he's filed some paperwork. Is it a surprise? Should we be surprised? And what do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am not his number one fan, but I do, you know, I think this is to be expected. I think he probably was going to run again. I think if anything, the pandemic made that, you know, more definite. And And the question is, will there be a challenger in the Democratic primary? And I don't know, and we'll see. But
is that going to be your next candidate move? if there's no challenger,
I certainly don't like the idea of being the governor, and have it being responsible for so much. I like being responsible for things I know about and things I'm intimately familiar with.
I understand.
But I do think it's possible to be a challenger, and we'll see how that goes. But he's definitely, I think, well positioned to win re-election if he, doesn't keep making so many mistakes.
Yeah, it seems like, that's a good way to, put it. Other things, just a couple last minute things here. The 2020 presidential election, obviously that could be a whole show in itself as well, but a couple things on it. One, the debate, what'd you think of it? What'd you think of that? And then two is, is really just very, very recent, the president coming down with coronavirus and a lot of people around his inner circle. So,
yes, including our former governor.
Yeah, Chris Christie, that's a good point.
Yeah, positive. On the debate, I feel like it was, obviously disappointment, disgraceful. It was not a good, productive discussion. I think it goes to show how far Trump has fallen over these 4 years, that he really, still doesn't get it and can't control himself, to the point where there were just some moments that were just so childish that I think even some of his, heartfelt meaning, people who really, back him just had to be like, oh, really? You're making fun of him for wearing a mask. And then, to have the news later in the week that he himself has been infected is just, I think, a big blow to his campaign. But it's hard to say what the heck is going to happen with, so many things being done differently. And, this is obviously an unprecedented situation. And so I don't know what to expect.
What's that? Yeah, no, you're right. Should be interesting last month and with everything going on leading up to the election. If you have anything else, please share. Otherwise, I'd like to obviously thank you, but I'll pop up, since we're on video here on Zoom, I can pop up the New Brunswick Today, and maybe you can just walk us through some just kind of point out from a user kind of experience how to work your way around it.
Sure.
But while I'm doing that, feel free to chime in on anything else.
Yeah, thank you again for having me. The NewBrunswickToday.com website is the best way to stay up to date on New Brunswick, but also you'll want to like our Facebook page where we have those live videos that we do. And we're sort of the only ones doing this, is we actually broadcast the government meetings live. As I mentioned, they're in so many cases, virtual. They're being conducted via Zoom like this interview. But what we do is we actually, broadcast them on our Facebook page, even if the government doesn't. So we try to give people the number to call in so they can participate, but also they can just watch it on our page or listen to it on our page if they want. So definitely like the Facebook page. And we are pleased that now we're broadcasting simultaneously on Periscope at NB_today and our YouTube channel, New Brunswick Today. So definitely follow us on all those, and you can find us at the New Brunswick Today website. And if you like what you see and you want to see more like it, you can see there is a donate widget there on the right hand side, and you can also subscribe to get the email alerts, where you'll get an email every day that we've got a new article. Definitely we appreciate any support folks can give to keep us in business, even if it's just $5 a month. That helps us get,
That's a good point, Charlie. Thank you for all those, the ways to find you, and to find the media outlet, but it's 100%, it's a free, news outlet, and it's 100% funded by what, donations or something else as well?
We're lucky to have
advertising.
We're lucky to have some great grants, and, you may see some advertising on the website that's very good. in terms of the revenue, but most of our support does come from our readers. And we've been lucky to have a lot of loyal readers who over the years signed up to be monthly supporters. That is the best way to support, but it's easy to do either way on the New Brunswick Today website. And we actually just launched our store where you can buy some Brunswick Today merchandise if you want to support
us. That's awesome. That's great. So yeah, if you're on the audio, I would definitely tune in. And well, you know how to get to New Brunswick Today, but you should check this stuff out. It's very cool. Please donate if you're especially if you're a viewer and a reader of the New Brunswick Today, and that's great. Thank you for everything, Charlie. As always, it's great to have you on the show. It's great to get your takes on a lot of things, your expertise in some of the OPRA and OPMA stuff is, I think, second to none. And it's really helpful for New Jersey. I think a lot of the stuff that you do and stand for is something that a lot of people can take away. And if we could have more Charlies and other municipalities, I think it would go a long way. So I really appreciate it. Thank you again. Genuinely appreciate it. And send us anything. And when I put this, when I release the episode, I'll put out a bunch of stuff on the website, the Facebook, and everything else.
Thank you for the kind words. And yeah. Do keep up the good work. We need more stuff like this program.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yep, it's a educational type of show, and I think you just basically nailed all of the check marks and of what we try to do. So thanks again. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And I look forward to talking to you hopefully sometime in the near future.
Sounds good.
Thanks. All right. Take care, Charlie.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Garden State Debate, where the talk is real. Garden State Debate. No joke, no frills. Garden State Debate. Talk of the town, Garden State Debate. For people all around, yeah. Garden State Debate. Garden State Debate. Garden State Debate.